Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, 850-437-1620. If you have any questions for our guest in studio today, attorney Terrence Gross from Gross & Schuster is with us for this half hour. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing great.
Good. So I know you always come with a topic prepared. What is this week about?
I do, but before I get into my topic, sometimes we do have new listeners. So I have been a lawyer for only 45 years, all of which has been in this area. My primary office is Pensacola, but we do have offices in Milton, Crestview, Fort Walton, and Navarre. My three law partners are my three sons, and we represent people exclusively for personal injury. So a lot of our topics usually evolve around that topic, but every now and then I do take a vacation from personal injury talk to talk about something else. And with election looming, I want to go over something that I learned in college. I was a political science major, and because of that, we got deep into government and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I want to go over the Electoral College because you hear things bantered around. So my first question to you is, are we a democracy?
We are a republic.
A democratic republic. Mm-hmm. Very good. You get an A-plus on your oral exam.
I was a poli sci student, too.
But I do hear all these people running for political office talking about we are a democracy or whatever. Well, no, because we have the Electoral College. And a lot of people, especially left-leaning people, want to do away with Electoral College. They don't understand it, think it's outdated. And we have to look at its genesis. So it came from two people, James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, who are the authors of our Constitution. And Jefferson traveled a lot in Europe, even France, looked at other constitutions and countries, how they were run, and they gave a lot of thought to this. Meanwhile, if we could take go do some time traveling, and we go back to 1789 in America, what would we see? Even back then, what we saw, there were certain cities that were blooming, that were becoming quite populated for those times. Boston, New York, Philadelphia, even Richmond. And what they wanted to do was to guard against these cities that got so big with so many people controlling the entire country, and ergo, the Electoral College was devised. If we did not have the Electoral College, why would people in Idaho even vote? There's not many people there. Montana, Rhode Island, South Dakota, North Dakota, because they're just not populated states. Mm-hmm. But because of the Electoral College, people in those states do have a voice. And yes, certain states have more electoral votes, as they should, due to populace. So our Congress is made up of 435 members, and that's how many electoral votes are, 435, and you have to get a majority. But if you look at a very close election, if we go back to 2016, when it was Trump versus Hillary Clinton, she did win the popular vote, mm-hmm. no doubt about it.
3 million votes, I think.
But if you take out the city of Los Angeles, take out one city, you take out Los Angeles, Trump would have won the popular vote. You take out one city, New York, Trump would have won the popular vote. So this whole thought about majority rules, I know what the people are doing and saying, but our forefathers were wise enough. They wanted every state to have some voice. But even like Nevada, even in this election, if you look at the real chartists, the people that are trying to go blue states and red states and swing states, Nevada is a swing state. And the only reason it's sort of relevant, it's only got 7 electoral votes, which doesn't sound like many, but in a very close election, It could be a game winner. So it is one of the states that is designated a swing state. Swing meaning it could go either way. And we saw how it worked at the last election in 2020, Biden versus Trump, where certain states at the very end Some of the polling came in late. You know, when you went to bed, it looked like Trump had won Pennsylvania. When you woke up, he hadn't, because votes were still being counted. Same thing with Georgia. So today, if you look at the chartist, if you watch the TV, what states are in play? What states are going to have a major effect on the outcome of this election? And as far as the swing states go, because most of the South is red. Red means Republican, except for one aberration, and that would be Georgia. And with Georgia, what's happened, it's always been a red state historically, except we now have Atlanta. So Atlanta is not New York yet or Los Angeles yet, but it's booming.
Yes, it is.
Very successful. A big hub airport for the Southeast. It's drawing a lot of business, and with that, jobs and a lot of people coming from other states, a big influx of so-called outsiders. So if you didn't count Atlanta, Georgia's easily still red. All the people that are up in the Appalachians in Georgia and Dillard and Clayton and all that are hard, fast conservatives, but yet Atlanta has so big a populace, it's swung that state to the blue for the last election. So it is still a swing state, depending on who comes out and so forth. So that's a swing state. So it's going to be very hard fought. But I think the way Georgia goes could affect ultimately who our next president is. Another swing state is my native state where I was born, North Carolina, which is also the South. And with it, you got two things going on. Charlotte is kind of like the new Atlanta. I mean, I was raised in Charlotte, born in Asheville, raised in Charlotte, and very familiar with Charlotte. So Charlotte's kind of today is what maybe Atlanta was 30 years ago. They got a big hub themselves. A lot of banking is done there. Bank America, that's their home office, for instance. So again, jobs, a lot of people coming from different states, maybe the Northeast, maybe California, that are affecting the vote. Then you also got the, I forget what they call it, the something belt. It's escaping right now.
Sun belt?
What?
Sun belt?
No, not the sun belt, but the, it's right through Chapel Hill and Duke, where there's a lot of the universities are, which are more liberal thinking. And it's a tech area, so it's got it's a tech type belt. It's a home of technology, a lot of jobs in the technical fields because they have so many college graduates between Duke, NC State, UNC, and all those schools in that little belt. So North Carolina is definitely a swing state this time around. Michigan was a swing state in 2020, probably not so much today. It's pretty much gone blue. So not that it can't be flipped, but it's considered to be pretty safe for the Democrats at this point due to different reasons. But Pennsylvania is definitely, again, a swing state. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't really know, because I just don't think of Pennsylvania and oil. I don't. Texas, yes. Dakotas, yes. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was such a big deal up there, but apparently fracking and all that is, and that creates jobs and people vote their jobs. So I think that's why we've seen Kamala Harris sort of flip a little bit on her 2019 anti-fracking language to now, oh, I'm open-minded about it. So I think it explains a lot, because Pennsylvania is a key. They have Shapiro, their governor, that's Democrat. He's a moderate Democrat, but still a Democrat. So it's very much up in play. It's got a lot of electoral votes. I think it's got 16 maybe. So that's a big issue for them. So those are the swing states that I see. Some are like Florida's not even close. I read today's paper. If you read the Journal, it's a margin of 10 points, which doesn't really surprise me. Mm-hmm. You still got South Florida up here. You go only 10 points because, you know, Northwest Florida is notoriously red, but when you get around the Miami area, where, again, that's our biggest populace, not so much that way. But Trump has made some inroads, and we have to be very delicate and very careful when we start using racial identification language. So when you say Hispanics, you got to be very careful because all Hispanics are not alike. And I would tell you that Cuban Americans probably think a lot differently than maybe Mexican Americans. So the Cuban Americans came over certainly more likely than not with the Castro regime took over, have been in America quite some time, are scared to death of socialism or anything close to it, and have turned out to be very right-thinking, very Republican down there. And with Marco Rubio, you see evidence of that. But so Trump has got a pretty good following as far as that. You know, more recent newcomers, maybe of Mexican lineage, maybe worried about Trump's language about the deportation. So you can imagine they may vote differently. So it's very interesting how the demographics work and the breakdowns. Trump, for some reasons, also made tremendous inroads into black males, which is some people could start scratching their head. But a lot of it has to do with jobs, that the jobs did flourish and meaningful jobs when he was president, and maybe not so much today. You know, when we look at the job and unemployment, that tells you a little bit. But the problem with unemployment figures is this. Here's the problem. If a person loses their job, they file for unemployment. After a while, some people just give up. I had a friend that was laid off in the 2009 meltdown, and he was in his early 60s. He probably wanted to work till he was 70, but said, you know what? I got laid off. I'm too old to go knocking on doors looking for jobs. I'm just going to retire earlier, take my Social Security earlier. So he doesn't count towards unemployment because he's not seeking a job no longer. Mm-hmm. How many people have given up? How many people have accepted jobs that were way less? So if you had an executive making $80,000 a year that got laid off and finally, just to feed his family, found a job for $40,000 a year, he's not unemployed, so he doesn't count, but his income has been cut in half. So all these figures are not totally insightful. And so as far as throwing the unemployment. So I think with the Trump, I think most people realize that he really wanted to, it was into manufacturing. When they say make America great again, making maybe Detroit building cars and not Mexico and not China and take over as they used to be. So a lot of people subscribe to that. That may explain a lot of different voting patterns. But getting back to the Electoral College, it's a good thing. It's a great thing. It was devised at the inception of a country like the Constitution. It should not be tinkered with. There's a reason. It was thoughtful. It's worked. And for that reason, it should stay. I think any inroads into what we presently have for immediate gain could be disastrous. You know, there are minions out there that would like to see the Supreme Court expanded. Why? I mean, it's pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. To stack the court. If they could get a Democrat in the office and go to 16 justices, you get to appoint 7 liberals, and there you go. But that's a slippery slope. So we've been at 9, I believe, since the 1850s or 60s. So for quite some time, we've set at 9. It should stay there. And the way it's devised, I've always felt this about the Supreme Court, that the winner of an election gets the spoils of war. Just like you win a war, you may get more territory. You may get other concessions from whoever you defeated. But when you win the presidency, our system and our Constitution calls for the president to appoint justices. Of course, you would think that most Republicans would appoint conservatives and most Democrats appoint liberals. And every now and then you get a surprise. You do get surprises. Justice Douglas, for instance, who will go down in history as one of our more liberal justices, was appointed by a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things go on. And I'm really a purist. Now, I'm going to say something that is going to be very unpopular, probably with the audience. But again, as a political scientist, if I want a government to work, you can't just bend the rules when your side takes office. So if the Republicans are in office, you can't bend the rules to suit yourself, because it's quid pro quo. It's, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And what I took issue with was going back to Barack Obama, who was elected, like it or not, folks, he was elected. And with 10 months to go, our Supreme Court justice died suddenly, and Alito. And of all people, Barack Obama chose Merrick Garland, who's now the Attorney General, ironically, under Biden, but chose him 10 months to go. It was pretty much filibustered and whatever by the Republicans until such time, because they had control of the Senate and he never got confirmed. I did not like that. Now, did I want a liberal-minded person on the Supreme Court? Me, myself, personally? No. But I want the system to work. And with 10 months to go, I really believe that Barack Obama, who is duly elected, had the right to appoint, if the person's otherwise qualified, which Garland certainly was. He was an appellate judge. He served on the same court, exact same court, with Kavanaugh, by the way. Mm. And so he was certainly qualified. He was a jurist, maybe left thinking, but he should have been allowed. And so all that does is open the door for that to happen in the future with some Democrat. Maybe Kamala Harris does get elected, and maybe 10 months ago some Republican dies of a heart attack up there, and whatever. So it's just the shoe could be on the other foot at some point. Or maybe if Donald Trump's elected, really, and they stalemate him because there's maybe a Democratic Senate. But anyway, I took grave issue with that. Now, if it's 30 days to go, okay, that may be too close to call. I mean, that's not much time, but 10 months was plenty of time for our process to work. And what I marvel at, we don't have to go too far back in time, but I remember when Ginsburg, who is probably of modern times one of our most liberal justices, appointed by a Democrat. But when it went up before the Senate to approve her, the vote was 98-2. That was in the 1990s. That's mm-hmm. not that long ago.
Yeah.
And she was up because it wasn't so partisan. They said, is she qualified? Well, yeah, she was an appellate judge and so forth, very qualified and knowledgeable of the law. And the Democrat at that time had a right to appoint such a person and did. But now what we see is these carnivals. And what we saw with the Kavanaugh appointment was disastrous. I mean, it was an embarrassment in the eyes of the world. You're bringing up instances that allegedly happened in high school that were never reported. No documents. Some lady coming forward and never had filed anything, and all of a sudden, decades later, accusing him of a potential rape. And how do you counter that? He's just sitting there. How do you counter that? In high school, how can I defend myself? Where were you on that night 42 years ago, Mr. Kavanaugh? Heck if I know. I was 17 years old, 18 years old. So it's turned into that, in the circus, and as opposed to are you qualified, and as it should be, and I don't know if we'll ever get back to those ways. I remember with Bill Clinton as president, a Democrat, he was able to work with Newt Gingrich of all people, a conservative, and get bills passed. They would reach across the aisle
mm-hmm.
and convince But now there's this partisan thing, and then even the Republicans saw the infighting. If the leader of the Republican Party is not conservative enough, he's ousted, like we saw more recently when Johnson took the lead. I just wish we could tone it down to some degree, but people are the emotions. This is the most emotional election cycle that I can recall right now, this one. Now, there's been some feisty ones, you know, the Bush-Gore and Clinton and Trump and all this, but nothing so divisive as this. And, you know, in our household, I think me and my wife are going to cancel each other out. I think most people can gather where I lean. I do lean right, but it's, you know, my best friend in the world is from North Carolina, and he is very, very liberal. He's one of these academians I just discuss, and he's floored. He says, I can't understand you. I don't understand how you, and I try to explain, but it doesn't get there. So it's very divisive. I think we're all ready to get it over with one way or another. Let's just get it over with. Mm-hmm. And I never forget this. When Obama was elected, all my conservative friends said, America, it's over. It's over. Was it? No. We're still here. We're still functioning. And then when Trump was elected, it's over. The left said, it's over. It'll never be the same. And it was. And under Biden, it's over. It hasn't been over. We'll get over it. And if Kamala is elected and she does a horrible job, she'll be ousted in 4 years. And if it's really bad, then a Republican will come in. That's what goes on. That's how it works. I see we're out of time already. It's been fun doing this just to get away from the personal injury law. But what I do for a living is personal injury. We are a local firm. And this is Terrence Gross. If you wish to call us locally, you could call us at 850-434-3333 or visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com. We have a new webpage. I also have a podcast. If you go Terrence Gross Attorney, I have podcasts on many issues of the day. Some are political, some are more political science, some are law, but I have a lot of topics. I'll be back in a couple weeks.
All right. Thanks for being here today.